Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Superchargers, headlights, and more. With over 122 million parts, eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Stay on your A-game with all the parts you need at the prices you want. It's easy to bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
The Volume.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, Eddie Hearn is here, Matchroom Boxing, Matchroom Boxing USA. Got a show this weekend in San Antonio. Bam Rodriguez dropping down to 112 pounds. He's going to fight for a title there. You can watch that fight on DAZN. Eddie, we were just talking about jet lag, but like you were in London like 5 minutes ago. And now you're here in cold and kind of London-esque
San Antonio.
Can't believe
it's cold. Apparently, I looked at the forecast this week and it was like 80-odd degrees.
It's unbelievable.
Now it's gone to 50.
It's
so
brutal.
Yeah, I think the key is once you stop or you slow down, that's when everything just, that's when the wheels come off. Mm. So literally like it's just event to event. So this week, honestly, I know my job is to sell the cards, but this is an unbelievable night of boxing. Really, really good. Even some stuff on before the bell as well. And coming off the back of AJ, we've got a great run now. We've got Cordina Rakimov, April 22nd. May 6th, Canelo against Ryder in Guadalajara. May 22nd, Cordina Rakimov in Wales. May 27th now. April 22nd, Cordina Rakimov is in a couple of weeks. Canelo against Ryder, May 6th. And then May 20th, Chantel Cameron against Katie Taylor in Dublin. May 27th, Wood against Lara. That's what I was trying to say.
A lot
and
happening.
Lots to announce in
You're
June,
right, though, about the undercard of this fight. I think Raymond Ford is in a tough fight with
really
Magdaleno. Step-up fight for him. Chance to be in a title picture with the win there. Ahmed Aliyev, stakes couldn't be higher. I mean, that's a lottery ticket fight right there. Like, you win that fight, winner of Fulton Inouye is probably in your future. So a lot there. And I want to talk about Bam and his decision to move down. But you mentioned AJ. I want to get your thoughts because you've had about a week to kind of process what you saw in London against Jermaine Franklin. You've got some time before you decide what his next move would be, but having digested it for a few days, long flights, you know, what are your thoughts now about what the right next step is for him?
I think firstly, you know, the critics are always super harsh on those kind of guys. And that comes with the territory. When I look at it, I actually liked a lot of what I saw. I thought his defense was good. I thought his feet were good. Franklin threw like 330 punches, only landed like 60 or something like that. He blocked a lot. He took a lot on his gloves. He wasn't aggressive enough. And I think it's like a mixture of just a fighter becoming more aware and more intelligent and also what was on the line, which was his career. Like one mistake in that fight and your career's over. So I think he was a bit tentative in that fight. It's his third trainer in three fights. He's going to need some time with Derek James. He wants to be in the big fights. But I think at this stage in his career, where money is not the driver, I think we have to make the right moves for his career. And ultimately, the right moves is another fight in July of the same level or a level slightly above Jermaine Franklin. And I think whether you get criticism or that for that or not, it's what he needs. And I just feel like his whole career has been built off either the mandatories or what the fans want to see. And now it's like, let's get it right. Let's be the best you can be for a run that will include Wilder and Fury and maybe Joyce and others as well. So looks like back end of July he'll be back out.
Is Dillian White that fight?
I think that's the front runner. Yeah, I mean, I quite like the Otto Wallin fight, really, but he's a southpaw, and I just think...
How many emails I get from Otto Wallin's
I know, and Dimitri. Like... Dimitri Salita messages me all the time about... the reason I like the fight is because Joshua's going to look best. Joshua's going to be more effective against bigger guys, right? Taller heavyweights. That's why Franklin was actually a bad style for him. So I like that fight in that respect. I also like the fight because he had a good fight with Fury. But the problem is, he's a southpaw. So when you're progressing with a trainer, the last thing Derek James wants is a southpaw, especially when you're not going to fight a southpaw in Fury and Wilder. So why would you go back and fight another southpaw? So I think that will make it difficult. But, you know, if a deal can be reached with Dillian White, I think that would be a smart fight for both.
You've often said, and I've agreed with you, that Anthony Joshua is one of the best finishers in all of boxing. To be a finisher, you do have to trust your chin because you've got to be willing to exchange. Do you have any concerns that that guy may be gone forever, that the consequences of previous fights, whether it is the war with Klitschko, the knockout against Ruiz, the kind of shots he took against Usyk, that that guy might not be able to come back?
Well, I think if you look at it, I mean, he was prepared, and he did, in the ninth, even in the last round, let his hands go throughout the Usyk fight. Maybe not as much as he should have early, but he was trading, he was taking shots to the chin in that final stage of the fight. I don't think you're ever going to see the reckless Anthony Joshua that you saw in the early part of his career, which was probably quite a naive fighter as well.
Fun fighter, though.
It was fun, don't get me wrong. I know, but if you look at people like, I mean, Klitschko's a great example, Vladimir. After he got stopped a couple of times, he just basically adopted a style that was extremely effective, that meant that he could win consistently and become one of the greatest heavyweights, certainly of the modern day generation. He wasn't very exciting to watch, and AJ's always going to be more exciting to watch than Vladimir, but there is an element of, like, at what point does a fighter sort of turn around and go, guys, I'm not being funny, but I'm not going to go in there and just trade up leather for you anymore. He has to take parts of what made him so effective and also use the stuff that he's learned. Like, technically, he's a much better fighter than he ever was, or certainly that he was in those days. But offensively, sometimes he's not as effective. And I think he does. I think he trusts his chin, no problem. But I just feel like, especially on Saturday, he was like, look, if I dive in here, I'm reckless and get caught, like I did against Ruiz, and I get beat here, my career's over. So I know you all there with your hot dogs and pints want to see me go and, like, have a war, but I really need to win this fight, you know? So it's like, it's difficult. You know, when you're talking to a fighter and you're talking to the trainer, you're like, come on, we want to see more entertainment. The trainer's like, get this guy out of the training room now. But everybody acknowledges, Derek included, that he wants to see more offensively.
Yeah. All right, Canelo Alvarez returns on May 6th against John Ryder. A couple of weeks ago, we had David Benavidez win pretty impressively against Caleb Plant. Didn't get the knockout, but beat Caleb Plant down exactly as he said he was going to. There is going to be a free-for-all over the next few months to be that man next in line to face Canelo Alvarez. Do you think David Benavidez changed the calculus in the mind of Canelo? Because you've always said Canelo wants that rematch against Dimitri Bivol. Canelo has said that he wants that rematch against Dimitri Bivol. But Benavidez is a marketable guy, and that's a compelling fight in the U.S. Do you think what Benavidez did changed anything for the future of Canelo?
Not for September. I mean, I can't tell you how adamant, and this is way before Benavidez Plant, how adamant Saul and Eddie Reynoso are about the Bivol rematch. It's not about the marketability. It's not about the money. He got beat. And it's been eating him up, in all honesty. And he has to get a chance to avenge that defeat. I've said a few times, the Dimitri Bivol fight at 175 is a tougher fight for Canelo Alvarez than David Benavidez at 168. Benavidez is a great fighter, by the way. But if you look at the odds of how those fights would start, Canelo's a massive underdog against Dimitri Bivol at 175. So you can't knock him for taking a tougher fight. But also, at the same time, David Benavidez is a very, very marketable fight and a big fight for Canelo as well. And all I can tell you, as someone that's been around those guys and been around that team, they would have no problem fighting Benavidez. I've also heard that Benavidez signed a 3-fight deal with PBC to fight Plant, I think Morel, and then Charlo or something like that. So I don't know how he's tied up in that respect. But I think it would lend itself well for potentially a Cinco de Mayo fight in 2024. Mm. He's got John Ryder, Dimitri Bivol. And honestly, like, there is no way that Eddie and Sal wouldn't fight David Benavidez. Mm. They want these fighters to prove themselves, or they want them to bring something to the table, like Bivol does with a championship belt. And I think he's gone a long way to doing that by beating Caleb Plant, not the monster that Saul Canelo Alvarez is, because he bashed up Plant and stopped him, which Benavidez couldn't do after throwing the absolute kitchen sink at him.
It is one thing to look great against Caleb Plant level opponents, but Canelo's a different beast altogether.
Yeah. Like, that's, oh, yeah. I mean,
you can't do the things you did against Caleb Plant against Canelo. No, simple as that.
No, look, Canelo is a favorite against David Benavidez. It's a very good fight. He's a massive underdog against Dimitri Bivol at 175. So that tells you everything you need to know. But both fights, great. And I think it's great for Saul that he's got these options moving forward. Because, I mean, to be honest with you, May 6th is going to tell us a lot about Canelo. Like, although Ryder's a massive underdog, he will give it. I know him very well. He will give it everything. And if Sal's not on it, if Sal's hand's not quite right, if Sal hasn't quite got the hunger, he won't, you know, even if he wins, he may not do it convincingly against John Ryder. And if he doesn't do that, then you have to start looking at a potential regression. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But if he goes out and looks great against John Ryder, then all of a sudden he goes into the Bivol fight with confidence. But he's adamant. Like, you could, I could say to Sal, and I could sit Eddie Reynoso down and go, listen, I think this is a bad idea. Like, you boxed him once at 175. He won pretty comfortably. He's confidence now. They just tell me to be quiet and just make the fight. They're just desperate for a chance at revenge.
It sure sounds like, too, and this is just tea leaf reading, but people might wait for that fight at this
point. It's funny enough, I mean, there has been conversations with Vadim and the team here this week. Bivol potentially goes in June, but at the same time, if the deal is right for him to wait till September, he may do that. I mean, you know, last May he boxed Canelo Alvarez, then in November he boxed Zerdo Ramirez. I think ideally he'd like to have another one, but he's not going to mess that fight up for himself in September. So all depends on the deal, whether he waits or not. But at the moment, we've got him penciled in for June 17.
Why has the Munguia fight become so complicated? That it seemed like a marketable fight,
yeah,
for sure.
It never made sense. Like, Munguia is a 154-pounder moving to 160. Dimitri is a 175-pounder who's just beat Canelo Alvarez. Munguia's never boxed anyone, like, you know, certainly in recent times, and then wants to jump up like two divisions and fight Dimitri Bivol.
So you don't think he really wanted it?
I just thought it was strange.
Yeah, I mean, if you're Bivol, you want that.
Yeah, but really, if I'm Jaime Munguia, I'm doing everything I can to fight Gennady Golovkin. I mean, that's the fight. That's an unbelievably marketable fight.
What do you
make
of Golovkin's actions the last few months?
I think I'm probably going to upset someone here. But I just feel that recently, and particularly now, I just think he lacks a little bit of guidance. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's very experienced. He's got a great team of people around him. But sometimes you need someone steering the ship. And by steering the ship, I mean standing right at the front, looking out for the weather and telling you exactly where you're going. And I feel like he got into a situation, and it's not really his fault, because the Lara fight was called on him. The Falcao fight was called on him, which is probably the fight I would have taken if I would have, you know. I feel like, and also, Gennady's got to the stage where he doesn't actually need the belts, but quite nice to have one, you know.
And he seems to want them. Like, immediately after the Canelo fight, he said, I have two belts, or three belts, really. Counts the IBO belt.
Yeah, but
I have three belts.
Now he has none.
Yeah.
So.
But these were predictable problems to run into. You knew that IBF mandatory.
But that's the problem with no one steering the ship. You know, you can have people working on the ship, but you need to be saying, just to let you know, and it's the anticipation of, you have to be five or six steps ahead. So when you go into that Canelo, you're already speaking to the governing bodies and making sure you have a plan in place if you lose. But he lost, then the mandatories were called on him, then he relinquished one, then Lara was called on him, then he relinquishes two, and then before you know it, he's no longer a world champion. And that kind of speeds up the process of retirement, because then you sort of get to a stage and go, well, actually, oh, I got rid of the belts and
just know, turned 41 years old, right?
Well, yeah. And last boxed in September. Mm. So now we're coming up, won't be far, May. Do you know what I mean? He hasn't got a fight scheduled. You don't really want to be fighting once a year at 41. So, but I loved the Jaime Munguia fight because I think Gennady was the favourite in that fight, but it's a great fight for Jaime Munguia. So, but the problem is as well, just being honest, Gennady Golovkin is now accustomed to making a lot of money, and he's not going to come back and fight for a couple of $1 million. So you've got to put your hands in your pockets if you want to get Gennady Golovkin back in the ring.
Yeah. You mentioned that maybe Benavidez would go against Canelo in May of next year. Would that not be counterproductive for you in that you've tried to line up Berlanga for that fight?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, I'm just, you know, I don't know what the model is. I think Edgar's going to come back against a solid opponent in June. Someone in the top 15, someone that's boxed at world level, you know. And then he needs a big fight in the fall. A fight that will make people go, if you win that fight, I think you put your name in the hat for Canelo Alvarez as well. So we know that, you know, one thing I know about Sal and Eddie is they like as little aggravation as possible in terms of getting a fight made. And we're able to do that with our guys. So for instance, John Ryder, Dimitri Bivol, maybe Edgar Berlanga, etc., you know? But certainly the Benavidez fight, you know, that, I mean, Berlanga's a nice story, Mexico, Puerto Rico, but it's going to be a lot of people calling for a Benavidez fight, especially if he has another big fight later this year.
Is there a fight in your mind for Berlanga in the fall that puts him on the radar?
Could be Jaime Munguia himself. I mean, that's a tremendous fight.
That's a compelling fight, yeah. That's, you know, that's good fight.
Edgar Berlanga against Jaime Munguia in the fall. I mean, that's your Mexico-Puerto Rico warm-up.
How confident are you in a fight like that as Berlanga's promoter?
I mean, I want to see what he's going to bring in June. You know, and I want to see him steamroll the June opposition for the level that it's going to be, which is a top 15 guy, like, but couldn't lace Canelo's boots. That's who he's going to fight in June. But Edgar Berlanga has not yet shown that he's anywhere of the level of Canelo Alvarez either. So I want to see him steamroll that level of opponents and make a statement.
Yeah, he's an AA minus level attraction and still kind of a B level fighter with the opportunity to grow into that next step. Two more things I want to hit you with. Taylor Cameron set for May 20th. You see Brian Peters walking around here, big smile on his face, with tickets go on sale.
It's
happy as a clam, Taylor's manager. You had some controversy with Skotny on the undercard.
Yeah.
That was weird. Like, you had a long statement issued by Chantel Cameron not wanting her there because of Shane McGuigan, who was the trainer. What can you tell us about why that kind of came about and what the resolution
is? Exactly what, I mean, I said to Ellie Scottney today, she was like, I've had so much publicity over this, I can't believe it. You know, like, so, I mean, we're talking about her on this pod. You'd never have spoken about Ellie Scottney, you know, other than this
issue. Didn't even know she was on the undercard.
No, exactly. So it's been good for her in that respect, but it was, there is some terrible history. You know, everyone's got their opinions between Chantel Cameron and her former trainer, Shane McGuigan. When I say terrible history in terms of terrible fractured relationship, right? To the point where she does not ever want to be around them. And it emotionally upsets her, you know. So when I made the fight, I suppose I've got to take a little bit of the blame because I just didn't think. You know, I didn't know how deep that was. I had a chance. Ellie Scottney's been waiting and waiting. She's mandatory. I put it on that card. I thought it was a great slot for her to go on that card. And then when I announced it at a press conference, Chantel Cameron came, you know, and her team came over and went, no. You cannot have a Shane McGuigan fighter on the undercard. I will not fight if he is around that week. And I'm like, oh my God, literally, like, announced it 10 minutes ago. So I was like, right, everybody calm down. No, I'm just telling you now, this is the biggest fight of my career. Emotionally and mentally, it will ruin me having him around. I'm just being honest with you, and I'm not fighting if he's on the card. So I go back, I tell Ellie Scottney, she's devastated, she's in tears. I said, look, reach out to Chantel. She reached out. They started talking about maybe staying in different hotels, etc. And then at the end of last week, Chantel just came back and said, look, I'm really sorry, but I can't take this risk. Like, I've been waiting for this fight my whole life, and I know it's going to affect my performance. And then, you know, it's very... I understand Chantel's position. It's also very unfair on Ellie Scottney. But people said to me, oh, you should have just called Chantel Cameron's bluff. No thanks. Like, you know, Ellie was on the undercard. I mean, look, if Ellie wasn't mandatory, if we couldn't move the fight a couple of weeks, I would have had a much tougher position in this. But it just was what it was. And I think I understand both girls' positions.
Are you anticipating Amanda Serrano being available in September, October, whenever that may be?
October, November. Yeah, I mean, because I think she'll have an interim fight now.
Are you aware of what the injury is that she has?
No, I think, to be fair to Amanda, I mean, that fight with Cruz.
I didn't think they were going to announce
it. And
then
I got in the ring. She had a cut.
She did.
It was an absolute war.
That felt like it was too
quick. And I got in. But most, you know, to be honest, Chris, most people, trainer particularly, manager, if there's any doubt, we'll say hold. It wasn't like we didn't have to announce that night. Do you know what I mean? But we got in the ring after. I know, obviously, adrenaline's flowing. But Nikisa went to Jordan. Jordan spoke to Amanda. And they all said, no problems at all. Fine. Obviously, a couple of weeks on, neck's a bit sore, I think. I think the hand's still sore. And it's like, it means we've got to go back into camp now. And we're just not ready. So, unfortunately, you know, the timing was off. And, you know, we've ended up with a great fight in Chantel Cameron.
Yeah, it's a good
really
save.
Great fight. And it may be tougher. It may be tougher. But if she comes through, I expect to see the Serrano rematch October, November.
Which sounds like it would have to be indoors in Ireland, which sounds like
possibly.
Croke Park would be
possibly.
Out.
I mean, yeah, if you go October, maybe. But the Three Arena's been great. I mean, we've, you know, the tickets were expensive. But we've taken a great gate there. And there's room for more.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But I think the atmosphere will be incredible. And really looking forward to it.
So lastly, you've got Bam Rodriguez this weekend dropping down to 112 pounds. When he came to you, whether it was him, Robert Garcia, whomever, and said, I want to drop down for this next fight, were you for it? Were you against it? How did you react to it?
I was against it, really, because I felt like you're up there now. Chocolatito was the fight that I wanted to make, but obviously he's part of Tekken as well. Mr. Honda wasn't mad on that fight. I liked the Estrada fight. But then Robert Garcia, look, we want to go down. We want to win a second division title. We want to unify. We want to become undisputed. And then we'll come back. And then once I started thinking about it, and of course once we signed Sonny Edwards, I just think we've got a really good chance to get one champion in that weight class. Julio Cesar Martinez will fight on May the 6th in Guadalajara. Then I'd like him to fight Dalakian in a unification. If Jesse wins on Saturday, we put him straight in with Sonny Edwards in July. And the winners fight the winners. By the end of the year, you have an undisputed champion. And then he can move back up and fight Estrada. But he has to beat Sonny Edwards. You know, Sonny Edwards may be the guy to beat in the division. Honestly, I think he's, like, mentally, he's just one of those guys that he's so sure of himself, you know?
And he's clamoring for this fight, too.
Oh, he's well up for it. And I think there's so many great fights to make. How good would that be? Maybe even do that on the same card. You know, Dalakian against Martinez. Sonny against Jesse Rodriguez, and the winners fight the winners. That'd
you still have big names at 115. You've worked with Chocolatito, you work with Estrada.
Yeah.
Not a lot of news about either one of those guys. I've heard that Estrada might want to go again this summer in something of a tune-up fight, but like you are probably the only one with the power to make the fourth fight between
Franco,
the two.
Franco obviously now rematches in Japan, but like it's quite a tough spot, really, because the fourth fight's... Listen, I mean, how many are you going to do? That's the problem. But
you could probably do 10.
I know, and they'd all be brilliant.
Yeah.
So maybe. I don't rule that out. But yeah, those guys are in a little bit of a tough spot because away from each other, the fights just aren't as compelling.
Do you have an appetite for that fourth fight? I mean, it's expensive for sure because both those guys want to get paid.
You know, we have so many other fighters planned. We have a lot of fighters that want us to sign them. We'd quite like to add to the stable. So do you want to do the fourth fight or do you want to bring in a younger name, maybe with a longer future, you know, in a more marketable weight class? I don't know, it's tough. But at the same time, you know that Chocolatito Estrada 4 is going to be a tremendous fight. It's going to rate really well. You know, it's going to do a good gait. So it's difficult.
Like, give me the fight on the undercard tomorrow, Saturday, that people should watch.
I think that, you know, it's so difficult between those three of Matisse against Cesena, which will be an absolute war, a war. Ford against Magdaleno, because it's just such a good crossroads fight. But I'm actually going to go with MJ against Topalez, because we're off the back of the press conference today. And Topalez just looks like one of the toughest men I've ever seen in my life. Like, and I just think MJ is a really special fighter. And against the right style, someone who really comes to win, really tough, and someone that can punch, I think you're going to see the best of him.
He's coming off that tough hand injury. They said he broke it in seven places.
I I feel really bad, because that night I was screaming at him to do more. Let your hands go. What's the matter with you? Comes out, it's like he's broke his hand in seven places. Oh, sorry about that, MJ. So, yeah, you are right. And they fancy Sean Gibbons. I mean, Sean Gibbons fancies every fight he's ever involved with. But they do, they give him, you know, he's a tough man, this guy. Be a really good fight.
Are you close to a decision on Conor Benn?
Yeah, we want him to go June 3rd in Abu Dhabi, and we want him to fight Chris Eubank. I mean, that's what we want to do. But he may fight in the States. And June 3rd is probably the date.
You can't... we don't need to get into all of this, but it's going to be tough to get a fight in the States. Like, maybe you come to Texas, maybe they'll do it. But with this hanging over him...
No, we could go
California's not going to do it. Nevada's not going to do it. I think Andy Foster in California already said he wasn't going to do
it. Yeah, I know. Now, Andy Foster's made that clear. Yeah. But there's several. I mean, we're not... By the way, like, the last thing we want to do is be like a rogue...
Yeah.
You know, like, oh, let's just go to a state that will have him. Right. I'm not interested.
Florida.
Yeah, I mean, but I'm not interested in that. I want to go to a reputable state where we do a lot of fights. Not like, let's just go to somewhere bizarre that we'll never do a show in. So, you know, you've got options. You know, we've not applied for the license in Nevada. You know, they adhere to the WBC rulings as well. They've been involved with situations like that before.
But they're never going to go against the British board. Like, I don't think so.
But at the end of the day, Chris, Conor Benn doesn't have a British Boxing Board of Control license.
Right?
Right now, he's an international fighter. There is no investigation going on around Conor Benn, and they have no jurisdiction outside of their territory anyway. Right? We've just had an incident with Amir Khan. This is one of the major problems. Amir Khan failed a test on fight night. 14 months later, we hear about it from UCAD and the British Boxing Board of Control, and all of a sudden, now we have a decision. In a simple case of one test after a fight. So as complicated as the Conor Benn situation is, if we started that procedure now, how long is that going to take? 2 years to get a decision? I don't know.
It's reprehensible they didn't tell Ben Shalom and Boxer Brook about that.
Look,
every
UCAD test I've been involved with, I've been told by the board. You know, so who knows who knew?
Yeah.
Right? No one will ask the questions because it wasn't us.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's not fit for purpose.
Yeah.
It's fundamentally flawed, the process. So I want to know from the British Boxing Board of Control, if we go through this process with Conor Benn, what's the time frame? I'm not letting him wait 6 months. I don't really want him to wait 3 months. It's nearly a year since the test. You know, the WBC have exonerated him. They've put him back in the rankings. Some people want to say, yeah, but they're not a commission. It's still their testing, and they've put him back in the rankings. So a lot of the people...
Do you have a problem, though, with their... Like, what they offered up as an explanation, Conor Benn's not even buying into.
No.
And I don't think he can because clomiphene is not used in dairy in the UK, which is part of it.
I think, and this is my honest opinion, look, Conor Benn, there are some major flaws, in my opinion, around the whole process around these tests, right? If the WBC ultimately agreed with Conor Benn, they would be saying that the VADA testing that took place around his samples were flawed. And therefore, WBC, who runs that program, everybody has a major problem, right? So they looked at his diet and they know that clomiphene is found in eggs, and they said, that's the reason we give. Conor Benn, by the way, could have quite easily gone, thank you very much, off we go. But he said, that's not the reason that I gave, because then he gets a load of stick for eggs. I mean, the whole thing, it's been going on for 8 months now, every day. It's like so painful. But I want him to go through the process with the British Boxing Board of Control. But at the moment...
That feels inevitable. Like,
yeah, but they're acting like... I mean, they're giving interviews every day. Conor Benn's lost his head. I need everyone to have a clear head, but I also want to understand the process and how long it's going to take, because that one just took 14 months. So, to be honest with you, the whole thing's a mess.
Well, we did. I did watch. I was gripped by you and Simon Jordan, who I had no idea who he was. People in the US don't know, but like, that was quite the interview you guys did.
By the way, I mean, this is like every day. It's a witch hunt, really. And then this drops, British Boxing Board of Control, Amir Khan, 14 months, you know. And by the way, Amir Khan says today, I found out 7 months or 8 months after the fight. So that means that's when the board found out. So if he hadn't have retired, he would have boxed in the meantime. I mean, how can you have 7 months for a sample to come out?
I mean, you think they would have expedited it, though, if they knew he was going to fight?
No. I don't think they know what they're doing. It wasn't that they didn't expedite the hearing. I'm talking about the results. When you test positive, the board are alerted, right? The UCAD work for the board. Just to let you know, we have a positive test. They're talking about that being found 7, 8, 9 months after the test. It's absolutely bonkers.
Will you promote a Pacquiao fight at some point?
I would do, yeah.
I don't want to see him against Conor Benn. I don't want to see Pacquiao laid out by somebody.
Yeah, but hold on. This is the one thing about Conor Benn that makes me laugh. His best wins are against Chris Algieri and Chris Van Heerden, right? When he was beating them, everyone was going, Conor Benn's overrated. Who's he fighting anyway? Now, he's such a danger to Manny Pacquiao, right? People go on like Conor Benn is Errol Spence or Jerron Ennis or Terence Crawford. I wouldn't make those fights. But Conor Benn's well off those levels. Like, I believe he's a world-class fighter. He's got lots to prove. Yeah, and he's coming back off what will be a year out of the ring, actually, more like 16 months. And he's coming back being mentally fragmented for that period. Do you know what I mean? But I don't think we're going to see that fight anyway. So
it's more Pacquiao's like mid-40s, and he was like 160 in that exhibition in South Korea. Like,
yeah, but don't worry, be 150 for this one.
Oh, great. Eddie, always appreciate your time, man.
All right, mate.
And when we come back, former 115-pound title holder, Bam Rodriguez.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Now, I'm supposed to talk here about what I remember and what I loved about my first car. And that's easy for me to do, because I still have my first car. And as long as it keeps running, and so far so good, I intend to have that car probably until the day I die. That's how much I love that car. It is like a child to me. Now, it does require some upkeep, and that's why I'm grateful for a place like eBay Motors. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly. Brake kits, LED lights, roof racks, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only, exclusions apply.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
What's up? I'm John Wall.
And I'm CJ Toledano, and we're starting a new podcast presented by DraftKings called Point Game. We're now joined by three-time NBA Sixth Man of the Year, elite bucket getter. Let's please welcome Jamal Crawford to Point Game. King of the Court one-on-one tournament. If they had it back in your prime, do you think you could have took it all?
I'm going to be honest with you. I don't think I could have took it all, but I think I would have shocked a lot of people. I think Kobe and everybody in their prime, Kobe would win a one-on-one contest.
Yeah, because you got to think, he's going to guard. He don't care about guarding.
He's going to guard.
He's going to guard. Like, you see him in the Olympics, he's going to guard. And then on top of
that. Like that, see that?
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Sam Cassell to Point Game.
I remember you came to my room crying tears. I mean, he was in a culture shock. He's going to withdraw us about winning.
Remember what I told you? I said, OG, you think I can get paid and go back and play in college? Because it ain't it.
Check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, DraftKings YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Jesse Bam Rodriguez, the now former champion at 115 pounds. On Saturday, he will attempt to become a two-division title holder when he moves down to 112 pounds, the challenge for a belt there. Cutting those last 3 pounds, has it been easier than you thought or harder than you thought?
A lot easier than I thought. I thought coming to 112, it was going to be pretty difficult. My last weight cut, I was weighing about 119 the night before. And we were talking about it like, damn, imagine another 3 pounds from 115. But when going into camp, I went in, you know, a lot more in shape than my last fight and a lot more disciplined mentally. And, I mean, it all paid off. So we're here in San Antonio now fight week and we're only 3 pounds away. So if I was fighting 115, I'd really be on weight.
Take me through that decision to vacate your belt at 115 and come back down to 112. Because you completed 2022 as one of the best fighters of the year, top three, at least in my book, in the opinion of a lot of people. You're deciding to move away from that weight class and go to 112. Take me behind that decision.
Yeah, well, a lot of people, they tend to forget that I was fighting at 108 when I jumped up to 115. The plan was always to win the title at 108 and then move my way up 112, 115, 118, and so far. But I got a late call notice to fight Carlos Cuadra. So that's the only reason I did move up. That's why I left my my natural weight class. So, you know, after 2022, we decided let's go back to the original plan and pick up some titles in different weight classes. So that's why we came back down to 112.
How much did your brother's presence at 115 influence that decision?
It made it a lot easier, honestly. If my brother wasn't fighting at 115, I'd probably still be there trying to pick up more titles as well. But, you know, I'll let him handle that business up there.
You know, about a year, 14 months ago, the hardcore boxing fans knew who Jesse Rodriguez was, but maybe the mainstream audience didn't. Last year, 3-0, three wins, you stopped two, or you beat two legends in the game, you stopped one of them. How has your life changed over the last year?
It's changed. It's a whole different lifestyle now. You know, I get a lot more love from the city. I get recognized a lot more. I get, you know, treated like a like a king here in San Antonio. It's, you know, some places I go. So, I mean, I'm just very blessed to be in the position I'm in. I always believed I would be here, but it came so quick that, I mean, it's just, I look back at it and it's crazy how everything worked out.
Yeah, and, you know, not only fighting here for the second time in San Antonio, but got great exposure on the Canelo undercard in September. So the visibility is increasing. But I got to say, I love that you're fighting here in San Antonio. I just don't think it happens enough where young fighters fight in their backyard. I mean, everybody wants to fight in Vegas. Everybody wants to fight in New York. But, like, you got to have a home base, right? Like, you got to have a place where you can build fans. And, you know, second fight in San Antonio in the last year, I mean, that's got to be pretty important to you.
Yeah, of course. I've said it like a couple times already during fight week. I can fight anywhere in the world on any card, but fighting here in San Antonio is special to me because my people come out, all my San Antonio fans, my family, my friends, they all come out and they show love. So whenever I get my hand raised in victory, it just makes it that much more better.
Yeah, you're fighting Christian Gonzalez, somebody that, you know, earned this position with, you know, what's, I think, six wins in a row getting to this point. What do you know about him?
I just know that he likes to move a lot, use his left hook, keep his distance. But, I don't watch too much video on my opponent before the fight. I just like to go in there the first few rounds and actually see what they have myself and then figure it out from there.
Do you watch any boxing at all? We were just joking about how you were asked about for your prediction on some of the big fights coming up, and you're like, well, I don't watch this fighter, I don't watch that fighter, so I don't really know. Like, how much is boxing part of your kind of schedule?
Well, when I'm in camp, I do watch, you know, every fight that's live. Even when I'm back home, I watch the bigger fights, but I'm not like a huge boxing head. I don't go back and watch old film. Yeah, there's a lot of legendary fights that people talk about that I've never even seen, but I mean, when I was an amateur, I did watch a lot more boxing, but just being a pro, I just kind of laid back off of that.
What's the one legendary fight that you're like, man, I got to watch that at some point? I get asked about that a lot. I got to watch that.
I mean, they're always talking about Barrera and Morales. Yeah. I mean, those are some legendary fights that they talk about. So,
I mean, you're a smaller weight fighter.
Even Vargas and De La Hoya, I've never even seen.
I mean, you're a smaller weight fighter. Like, these are rock'em sock'em robot fights, and you're probably going to be in a position to fight stuff like that in the future.
Well, one fight I did watch from the past was Carbajal when he fought he fought someone else. I forgot his name.
Oh God, Carbo was in some great fights.
He I think he fought him twice.
I'm gonna remember this after we're done taping.
Yeah, but I did watch that one a while back. I did go back and watch that one.
Yeah. So, but just not big on just diving into YouTube and.
Yeah. I mean, I'd rather watch other things than an old fight.
We were like. Desperate Housewives. What's on the Bam Rodriguez? What's on your Netflix Hulu queue right now?
Netflix. I was watching you. I was watching season 4.
Oh, yeah. That's the horror one, right?
Yeah, it's like the murder. Kind of creepy guy. Yeah.
Are you a horror guy?
Yeah. I like thriller and horror comedy. Yeah.
A little bit of everything. How do you think you'll be different dropping down in weight? Do you think you'll be as strong? Do you think you'll be quicker? I mean, what do you think the differences are going to be at 112?
I feel like I'm going to be a lot stronger. Even cutting weight, I still feel very strong, very healthy. And I feel like those 3 pounds are going to pay off. That, you know, I feel like I'm going to be a lot stronger, honestly.
You were more in Quadras, and then your last fight of the year, you were more boxer than puncher. I think everybody got super excited when they saw you knock out Sorungvisai and take the fight to him. Which are you more? Do you feel like you're more the technical boxer or somebody that goes into fights able to knock guys out?
Yeah, I mean, I go in there just and I do what I do. I mean, I feel like I'm a come forward fighter, but in a smart way, not very, don't get too reckless. I like to break you down slowly and just go from there. But I do feel like at 112, I'm going to carry a lot more power and be able to get a lot more fighters out of there early.
What's been your preparation for fighting a taller fighter like Gonzalez?
We brought in taller sparring partners. We worked on those things with the mitts, shadow boxing and all that. We just visioned a taller fighter and we worked on things.
Do you like fighting taller guys as opposed to shorter or same height?
Yeah, I mean, it don't really matter. You know, a lot of people don't like fighting taller fighters, but I do. Sparring taller fighters, it's always been every training camp because I'm always sparring bigger guys, so they're event like just naturally taller.
Opens up that midsection a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
A little more room to operate in that middle ground. One thing about dropping a 112, and you know this better than anyone, it's kind of becoming a hot division right now. You've got some name guys. Julio Cesar Martinez, a guy people are familiar with a lot in the U.S. Sonny Edwards has got a belt. How much did that have to do with? I mean, 115 is always going to be hot as long as Chocolatito's there, as long as Estrada's there. But now 112 is becoming as compelling or close to it as 115.
Yeah, 112, it's a very stacked division. Like you said, those names that you just listed. Me against any of those guys is just an exciting fight that people would tune in for. I mean, they're fights that people have been talking about for months now. Mm-hmm. So when I did finally make the decision, people, you know, they got excited. Mm.
You might have a decision to make after this fight. Like, you've become kind of the money man at 112, the guy that everybody's chasing, which has got to be a weird feeling for you because you were probably chasing guys for years at different weight classes. But you might have a decision to make. Like, have you thought about it all about kind of – and obviously you're looking at this fight first, but have you thought at all about, well, I want to go for Sonny Edwards. I want to go for Julio Cesar Martinez. Maybe I want to go back up in weight. What's your thinking there?
Well, my main focus has been April 8th. We haven't really talked about the next step, but – I know there's been a lot of talk with Sonny Edwards, so I would love a fight with him. If that doesn't happen, then Martinez is there as well. We're all in matchroom now, so they're easy fights to make, and I'm willing to get in there with either of them.
What do you think of Sonny Edwards?
He's annoying.
he's quite active on social media.
Yeah, exactly. But, I mean, I don't do any of that. I go in the ring, and I do what I do. He can do his talking, but it don't matter.
You should have a card where you fight Sonny Edwards and your brother fights his brother.
Like, brother versus brother. Yeah, yeah.
Well, he's talking some weird stuff about he'd fight his own brother.
Yeah, right? I mean, I seen that. It is what it is, though. I mean, that's how he is.
Yeah. Could you ever fight your brother?
Nah.
You can spar probably with him. I'm sure you've done
not
that.
Even sparring, we'll go light on each other. I don't.
Nobody wants to hit their brother. Yeah, like, exactly. You know, when you're a little kid, you want to hit your brother, but nobody wants to beat up their brother in a boxing match.
Yeah.
Well, I heard Robert Garcia, your trainer, say recently that he'd like to see you go back up and fight Gallo Estrada. Estrada's kind of out there looking for a big fight of his own. When you hear something like that, you know, are you open to that? Is that something you'd rather see your brother deal with first and then you get your chance?
Honestly, I would love a fight with Estrada too. I know in a past interview he was, you know, saying some pretty negative things about me, saying I'm not who they, you know, say I am and things like that. So I want him to prove that. I want him to show the fans that I want him to expose me if he can. Like he says that I'm not that good. All right, well, then show everyone what you mean. Show everyone what you're talking about.
Do you feel like you could be the kind of guy that jumps between, you know, these two weight classes over the next couple of years? You're still young enough, 23 years old.
Yeah.
You could, you know, physically you should be able to handle it. Do you think that's in your future where you kind of ping pong a little bit?
I mean, yeah, just depending on the fights that Matchroom they offer me. Mm-hmm. I can't make 115 easy. I'm already at 115 right now, so... Or even 112, those 3 pounds is not going to be a problem. I'll lose that by tonight. So whoever they offer me at 115, 112, I'm ready to go.
What's the highest you think you can go in your professional career weight-wise?
Probably 126, 130.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm only 23, still growing, so there's a lot of time for that.
What's like a – God, 126. Could you imagine you and Ray Vargas or something like that?
That'd be crazy.
Vargas is like 6 feet tall there. Is there like a hypothetical dream fight 3 years down the road, 5 years down the road with one of those guys in between 118 and 126?
I would love if I were Inoue.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
I knew you were going to say that.
Yeah.
Like that. How would you handle Inoue? How would you handle him?
We'll see. I mean.
That's a tough fight,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, exactly. Like that, but it's a fight that's it's definitely possible to make. I feel like in 3 years he'll be like 126, 122, and I feel like I'll be there at the time as well.
Mm-hmm.
Bigger names than we are now. And then to have it in Japan, too.
I was going to ask, would you go to Japan to fight anyway?
Yeah,
these guys can make a lot of money.
Because I was out there in Japan with my brother, and, man, it's amazing out there. People are nice, everything. It's just a different atmosphere out there, and I would love to go out there and fight.
Have you ever – I mean, you guys are – do you have the same promoters? Mr. Honda promote Inoue, too, or
is that, I'm not sure.
I thought he did. I could be wrong. But have you ever sparred with him? Have you ever worked out with him, anything like that?
No, never.
Have you watched his fights lately? Have you watched like the Donaire fight and
I seen the first one. The first one.
That guy can crack, man.
Yeah. He's a monster. I mean, that's why he has the name.
I think he could be at 122 for a while though. That Fulton fight coming up. Then he gets Akhmadali, who's fighting on your undercard.
Yeah.
There. But man, that 2 years, you in a way, that's a mega fight.
Yeah, exactly.
Pound for pound guys, chance to jump all the way up the list.
Yep.
He came right to the tip of your tongue right there. You named him right away.
I mean, it's always been a fight that I can see myself in. So whenever people ask me, you know, who's my dream fight, it's Inoue.
Love it. Now you got me thinking about that fight. I'm going to be pushing for that fight moving first. First up, Gonzalez this weekend, April 8th on DAZN. Bam, good to see you back, and looking forward to seeing when you got it 112, man.
Likewise, man. Appreciate you having me.
That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Eddie Hearn and Bam Rodriguez for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I'll see you next week.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists, like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, and Two Door Cinema Club.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel... It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Open a limited-time 11-month certificate at Kemba Financial Credit Union. At 5.25% APY, it's more than triple the national average, plus it's a safe and secure way to grow your money. Visit your local branch or kemba.org/cd for details. Offer expires May 31st, 2024. APY equals annual percentage yield. Restrictions apply. $500 minimum and $250,000 maximum deposit. Advantage status required. Comparison based on bank rate average. Federally insured by NCUA.